Welcome to season three of Goals Do Come True. We're going to be delving into the work optional lifestyle financial plan. Essentially, there are people out there in the world where work is optional for them. So we're going to delve into the tips and tricks on how these inspiring guests achieve that. So stay tuned for season three of Goals Do Come True with me, Doug Bennett, the goals guy. I look forward to helping you make work optional. Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Goals Do Come True with me, Doug Bennett, the goals guy. Today, I am honored to be joined by Trevor G. Blake. Now, Trevor uses a unique business structure based on a model of alliances, and we're going to delve into that, find out what that's all about. He's founded, managed, and sold three companies since 2003 for a combined value of over $300 million. He's the current founder and CEO of three more companies in varied industries, which he runs simultaneously. But his unique business approach doesn't have any employees. Now think about that. You didn't have the pain of employees. They serve their purposes, but they can be a pitter, as we use. Now, he's also an animal welfare activist, which means he's a good guy, because anybody that cares about animals, I mean, that's how I determine if people are good. My dogs like you, I'm going to like you. If they're not keen, they've got a sixth sense, there's something wrong. They smell it before I do. But anyway, enough of my babbling. Over to Trevor. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, how goals fit into your life, how even though you've sold these businesses for bucket loads of cash, you're still out there doing stuff. You could be in a work optional lifestyle financial position. That is my program. It's like get you to that place so that you can do stuff. And you're still doing stuff. So tell us why. Tell us about goals. Over to you. Floor's yours.
Thank you, Doug. Appreciate it. Thanks for the introduction too. When you figure it out, work stops being like work. So it's just play. So I just keep playing. I'm a bit addicted to building companies. I get bored easily too. So typically we live in a sort of get big fast world in business these days. And so it's a lot easier than it used to be able to start something, build the valuation sky high quickly, and then say, okay, I'm bored of that. I want to do it again. Get out and go do it again. That's what I do. In your introduction, I really appreciate it. The first three companies did sell for 300 million. Actually, I've sold another one since, so it's 600 million now. And it's not that the companies were making 600 million. It's that the companies ended up being valued at that kind of money. You don't have to make that much in revenue. You really only have to make, most valuations are 5 times revenue, 7 times profit. So you could, if you go from 0 to 10 million, then pretty much you're going to sell a company for 60, 70 million. And that's what I do. So I started off in 2003, bit of a late bloomer. I was already in my 40s when I started my first company. And like you said, employees can be a pain in the ass. I took stock of my regular career. I had a pretty good fast track career, mostly in the pharma business and biotech business. But then when I looked at my career, I realized I spent 75% of my time sitting in a meeting room bullshitting with everybody. And I was really good at it, which is why I had a fast track career. I could bullshit better than anyone in the room, right? That's how you get on. The thing that we're bullshitting about were how to keep employees happy. We stopped talking about customer service, and we stopped talking about product evolvement and stuff like that, things that really matter. And of course, the companies end up struggling as a result of that. So I didn't want that. Well, I thought, I'm starting my first company. I've got enough money to get started. I don't really have money to hire people. I had been smart enough in my regular career to get cross-functional training. So by that, what I mean is I made a nuisance of myself by knocking on the door of the manufacturing guys and say, taking a pizza and say, please tell me what you do here. Because I was sales and marketing guy, and you're not allowed to get out of your silo typically in corporate. So you have to do it yourself. So that's a bit of advice I always give to people, is to treat your current company as paid training for as long as you can. And then when you're ready to start your own thing, you'll have a bit more self-confidence to say, okay, I know just enough to be dangerous, so I can spot opportunities that I wouldn't normally spot in other areas. And I can also see issues before they become company killers, if you like. And that was really it. And so I thought I'll start that way. I'll do it for a few months, then I'll be able to hire somebody. And I never needed to hire anybody. So I just kept going, and it's very profitable like that. So the model of alliances goes by different names. The hub model, I call it. It used to be called virtual, but that's not cool anymore. People get scared of the word virtual. Mm. But it's so easy to do because technology allows us to plug and play with every function in a business now. We don't need to hire people and supervise them and train them. And so what happens is you end up, well, the best way I can do it, the best analogy I've got is, in my first company, I was probably about 6 months in, and I hadn't been to the UK. I'm from Liverpool originally. I hadn't been to the UK to see family for a while. They would give me a hard time, so I'll take a couple of weeks vacation. And it was in the early 2000s, so cell phones weren't as good as they are now. And I couldn't get a signal in the UK. I live in Southern California. I couldn't get a signal back here at all. So I was sort of traveling blind for 2 to 3 weeks. And I thought, okay, my company's probably ruined now. By the time I get back, it'll be out of business. I'll have to start again and put all these fires out. And then when I got back to the States, no one had noticed I'd gone. It was like all the vendors and all the people I'd contracted with, they hadn't noticed. And I thought, this is brilliant. So I can spend the rest of my life lying in a hammock and do this again and again. And that's pretty much what I've done, to be honest.
Wow. I'm gobsmacked, I am. Because that is seriously awesome.
Yeah, and I, the other thing, like you write about these things. Entrepreneurs, I think, are fixers. I've never met anyone who said, I want to be an entrepreneur. I've met lots of people who say, this thing really annoys me. I can't find a solution. I'm going to fix it myself. And you become an entrepreneur by default. So in all of my companies, it was a case of that. It was like something got under my skin and I decided to fix it. And I think because of the passion you need to fix something, the chances of them succeeding are pretty high. I've done the same also in self-help. So like you, I've proven first the concept of my version of goal setting before I've gone out and written about it. And I think that's really important because there's such a lack of authenticity in the self-help and personal development world that gets under my skin. And so I set out like you did too. I want to fix that. And so my first book, Three Simple Steps, was my first attempt to show that it's possible to do things differently and be equally or more successful. And then the second book is called Secrets to a Successful Startup, which is all about that business model. Basically, step by step, here's what you do. Put it in place. Go lie in the hammock. Let it all happen.
Sounds idyllic. I mean, I've got myself 8 or 9 trips on my Harley booked for the coming years, long weekends and weeks away and stuff like that. And we'll see if I've got a business at the end of it. But no, I like that. And I bought a copy of your first book and on Audible. And it sounds like the second one is going to be a good follow-up in that regard. I mean, I'm 60 now. You think, how much hassle do you want? But not having any employees sounds idyllic.
Yeah, and it's not. I'm older than you, believe it or not. So,
wow.
I'm doing it again and again because it is a plug-and-play model and it's so much fun. And the difference for me is that when I worked in the corporate world, we're indoctrinated to our egos make us into supervisors. We're always supervising. We're always filtering and checking over someone's shoulder. And really, in my business model, you're working with people who are good at what they do so you can let them get on with it. Yeah. And if I have one skill, it was learning to get out of their way and let them get on with the job.
Yeah.
And they love that. And so I had to change, my ego had to change from being a supervisor and a filter of information into being a trust peer-to-peer kind of guy. And it takes a while to trust people when you've not been trained that way. But when you get into it, once you get into it, 6 months, a year into it, you realize, you know what, these people are really good. They love the fact that you're not calling them up every 5 minutes to say, are we there yet? How's it going? And all that kind of stuff. If there's a problem, they'll contact you. And I think with the technology we have today, running a business model this way, I think it's just an idea whose time has come. So I'm passionate about it, which is why I do these podcasts and try to get the message to people that think a little differently and it'll go a long way.
Yes. No, I like that. I've got two girls work with me and they've been with me 6 and 7 years. And it's like my mantra is that don't trouble me, right? Don't ask me questions about anything. Just get on it. Look, I will, to start with, I said, look, make decisions. If it's going to cost us 200 quid to put it, if you make a mistake, I'll pay the 200 quid because that's worth it to me to not be bothered with you. How do I do this? Should I do that? It's like, just get on with it. Never, ever paid out 200 quid. So I increased it to £1,000 right now. So they're making decisions and they know how I work and they've been with me long enough. So I've never asked anything. And I haven't paid out £1,000 either for anything, you know, for a cock up, because I know that they're not going to cock up. They know what they're doing. And it's like, just get on with it. And then it's like, I get quite angry when they say, oh, one of my kids has got a this and I've got to do that. And it's like, I don't need to know that, right? I know you're going to get the job that you're employed to do done, right? If you've got to pop out for 2 hours because of something, I know I'm going to get that back somewhere else. And I'm really not looking over all of the time. And I think
I do the same thing. Like, so I pay consultants to do the job. I don't, if they can do it in an hour, good for them. If it takes them a year, well, that's their fault, not mine.
Yes, yes.
And they like that. They like that. I've convinced several people over the years to leave regular full-time work and become a consultant. And I've helped them get other clients because the definition of a consultant, especially in the US, is a tricky one. A consultant has to have several clients in order for me as to not be considered an employer. And to not have to play workers' comp and benefits and that sort of thing. And I've noticed that and every time, the guilt they feel for not working. So they'll have a task and they'll say, oh God, because they're not in hundreds of meetings all the time and not being distracted, they suddenly realize, my goodness, I'm productive. It's only taken me a few hours to do that. It used to take me weeks.
Yeah.
And then they'll sit there in front of the computer waiting for an email or sit by the phone waiting for it to go or something like that, getting burnt out slowly, as I call it. And I used to have to tell them, I used to say, it's okay to go shopping now. It's okay to go to the gym. You've done what you were paid to do. It's okay to have a real life. Yes. And it takes a while to get into that habit of saying, I remember one person wrote back to me. I think I've got her in my quote from her in the first book, Three Simple Steps. Like, I think, so she said, I never realized that grocery shopping could actually be fun. Because I used to have to do it at the end of the workday, rush around, rush home, make dinner for the kids, sort of mentality. And he says, here I am 2 o'clock in the afternoon shopping and I've got time to talk to people. And it just completely changes the dynamic. It's just a beautiful way for everyone to work. It's completely different. Once you take meetings out of the system, the need to have ridiculous, unnecessary meetings, it frees everybody up to have a lovely human life again.
A lovely human life. It's what we all need, isn't it? And if you can create that for the people that you're working with, then the loyalty, it's just like mega.
Yeah, it is. I've grown up with them now. My accountants are in Dallas. I've never met them face to face, not once. They started in 2003 with me. So 20 years we've been together. It was a husband-wife company, and that's all there was at the beginning. Now they're about 20 people, but also I know the kids. Because they didn't have kids when I first met them, and I met them in those days it was more Skype than Zoom. So like in my day Skype was the way to communicate. I don't know how Zoomed in and took over really. But it's funny, I feel like they're family, and I know everything about them, but I've never actually physically been in the same place.
That is crazy and phenomenal at the same time. Okay, so this is the Goals Do Come True podcast. We're in season 3, and I'm trying to gear myself towards people that have had success but carry on going. But it sounds like you've got a pretty seriously good work-life balance. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, success with balance, I call it. And I do know a lot of entrepreneurs who work 12-hour, 14-hour days, and they're successful by the means with which we judge such a thing. But they're on their third marriage, and they're probably taking some kind of distraction medicine like alcohol or pills or something in order to get through the day. I'm a lazy guy. I couldn't do that. It's not my style at all. So I like lying in a hammock. That's not a metaphor for me or a euphemism. I like in a hammock. I live in Southern California, and I like my time off, and I also like good relationships. I was lucky enough to be with my late wife for 40 years. So she was actually my mother's chemotherapy nurse in Clatterbridge Hospital on the Wirral. And she died in 2020. I had a year and a bit of going through grief, but I used all the tools and techniques that are in my transformation program and Three Simple Steps to help me get through that more quickly than probably is expected. And then I met another amazing woman who I just recently married, like a Canadian woman.
Congratulations.
But I mention it, thank you. I mention it because that balance is so important. To be able to have time with somebody who inspires you to want to be slightly better today than you were yesterday is the most magical thing possible. And I couldn't imagine letting go of that and replacing it with work. That to me is a definition of madness. And so the balance is really important. And the way to get balance, so I'm a physicist by training or by education. And so I'm always fascinated by facts. I like to know how and why things work and also how and why they don't work. And so that's led me to be fascinated into how the brain works. And so I discovered a long time ago that we fool ourselves into thinking we're getting into a zone. And what we're actually doing is getting diminishing returns the longer we concentrate, the longer we focus. And the brain can only concentrate for 2 hours at maximum. And so I started to break up my day, even when I worked in the corporate office, I would break up my day into a 2 hour work period followed by a 2 hour relaxation period. Now, when I was in the corporate world, I had to hide the fact that I was taking a 2 hour relaxation period from my boss, right? Because otherwise I would have got fired. But I used to do that. When I was a sales rep, I used to do 2 hours of work and then I would find somewhere really peaceful, like the Anglican Cathedral in Liverpool or something like that. And I'd just go and sit in the back and the rear pew in the cathedral and just chill for an hour or two, or go to a park and just have a sandwich and chill for an hour or two. And what I found was it really refreshed me and got me back to productivity again. And so I probably worked half as much as any of my colleagues, if you think of work as actually doing stuff.
Yeah.
And yet I won all the prizes. I won all the sales prizes. I was promoted to a regional manager within 18 months of starting that. I got on fast track career and within 6 years, I was vice president of commercial development at a big biotech in Boston. And all of that was possible and created, not because I'm smart at all. I'm not very average. I don't actually have a talent that I'm aware of. All of that was created by understanding how the brain works. So Peak brain performance is something that I'm pretty passionate about. And that's what I allude to. So when you read Three Simple Steps, you'll get some of that, which I think you'll find really valuable because it's so much more productive to break up the day into doing periods and being periods, if that makes sense.
Yes, yes. I hope you don't mind me interrupting this episode to tell you more about the Work Optional Lifestyle Financial Plan that I arrange for my clients in DB Wealth Planning and Preservation. From the title, you can see that it is all about making work optional. There are essentially three types of people. People that don't have enough money, people that have enough money but don't know that they've got enough money, and people that have got too much money. It's that middle group that I'm directing this at. People that have enough money but don't know that they've got enough money. This is where I can make the biggest difference to people's lives. Because if you know when you have enough money to live the rest of your life without fear of it ever running out, it brings a calmness to your situation. So, if you'd like to find out if you've got enough money, then go over to my website, www.dbwpp.co.uk. and click on the link about lifestyle financial planning. Anyway, let's go back to the podcast. I like that. I'll probably do it accidentally.
But when you're walking your dogs, those are the magic periods. That's when you have those breakthrough ideas.
Yes.
When you're out in the woods or out in the country with your dogs, and you think, why didn't I think of that before?
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, God, I put that down somewhere because I'm going to forget by the time I get back. Okay, success, phenomenal success, right? You alluded to goals and the way that you put them together. I'm going to ask you another question. I'm going to ask you this question, which was going to come later, but I'm going to ask it now, right? Did, as you were growing up in the corporate world and you were surpassing all of these other sales guys and all, did when you got to the position of trainer and manager and all, did you share with them the 2 hours on, 2 hours off, or did you keep that to yourself?
When I was a regional manager, I had all my sales reps do it that way, but not tell anybody. And so I'm talking now at the end of the 80s, and unfortunately, a couple of them aren't with us anymore, but I'm still in touch with all of them. And they all laugh because they still call it Trevorisms. We still remember the terms, and they were all successful. They all became sales reps of the year and knew how to play the game. So become sales rep of the year this year, and then next year have a pretty average time. And then the year after go up again, you'd be sales rep again. And so they worked the system and there's nothing.
They gamified it. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. I think I thought it was a really wonderful time in my life. Actually, I really enjoyed that period. But I have to go back even before that to when I was a kid growing up, I figured this one out because I was I was living, we were evicted from our house in Liverpool, and we ended up in North Wales in a broken down farmhouse, ramshackle place. And it was at the time when the English were being vilified in Wales for buying vacation homes. And the TV media, I don't watch the news, but I remember in those days, my parents being obsessed with watching 9 o'clock news and 10 o'clock news. And you'd see these houses being set on fire, vacation homes. The Welsh political party would set fire to them to try and make a point. And that got played out at the school playground, because now everyone hears my accent. So here's a Scouser. Scousers had this reputation for not being really good people back in that day. Yeah. And so I was getting bullied. And so I got out of the bully's way, and I used to hide in the public library in Ruthin, which is a town in North Wales. And while they were too stupid. They would never go in there or look for me. And so I just started reading, and I started reading biographies. And then I realized in all of these biographies, these amazing people who had incredible lives, that's how they did it. Mm. They spent more time in nature than they ever spent sitting in a room trying to figure out a problem or anything like that. So I just started to, I thought if it worked for them, these are people like from before my time, like Madame C.J. Walker in the 1800s, I mean, born to slaves. And she got out of that uneducated, abused, pregnant at 14. She got out of that life, a horrible life, I can only imagine, and became America's first female millionaire. I was blown away by stories like that, but she did it. She had this massive goal, right? I call them intentions, which is a massive goal with commitment. You've got to have the commitment ritual on top, I think. So she committed to do something and then use that success to change the lynching laws in the area where she was. I was just blown away by that. But she also used to split her day up. She would spend 2 hours sitting in a tree doing nothing except waiting for some inspiration. She felt it came from some form of God to her. I'll spend 2 hours in my hammock, and I don't care where it comes from, as long as I get it. I don't care who's responsible for it, where it comes from, but I want it. And so I just started doing the same thing. And at the time, my options really were farm labor or forestry labor. That's pretty much all was available work-wise for me. And when I was 15, my careers counselor, as they called her, she handed over an envelope, and inside the envelope was an application for apprentice manager at the chicken packing factory down the road in Denby. That's how the world saw me, and that's how she saw me. Mm. It made me mad. I, on the other hand, had the goal, the massive goal, of wanting to become an officer in the Royal Navy, because at the time I was blown away by a TV series called Sailor, and they had these young guys in beautiful uniforms sailing around the world, traveling. Well, growing up poor like I did, there's no way I would have the option for traveling.
Yeah, I would afford it, man.
Yeah, I wanted to travel. And so I set, this is your goal setting podcast, I set that goal, and I set it in a particular way that a formula that I've used. I hope I'm not trying to preach to the choir here with your listeners, but the formula being that I've already achieved it. So I would say I am an officer in the British Royal Navy. Instead of I want to, I can, and I will. So it's like I set the end result first, and I didn't care how I was going to get there. I made the mistake of sharing that at school when I was asked what am I going to do when I'm 16, and everyone laughed at me, and everyone saying, come on, you're British, you're Liverpoolian, turn it down a little bit. But I stuck to it. I was lucky enough to have the most amazing mother who believed in me, and so she helped me. I applied. This is a time when people from my side of the tracks never got to those elitist academies. Mm-hmm. I got in. I joined the same day as Prince Andrew. And it's a great story. It's in three simple steps, the story, but in pieces. But that's probably, for me, going from my set of circumstances and the way the world saw me to suddenly being in an elitist establishment. It took me a while to get used to that. And I remember some guy who, one of the people who was training me, tapped me on the shoulder one time and said, it's okay to smile, Trevor. Because I was so nervous, so trying so hard to not get thrown out.
Yeah.
And so that was my first experience of setting what to other people would be considered a massive goal.
Yeah.
And then I just kept repeating that in my life. So to go from sales rep to VP commercial development in 6 years, to most people, that would be unthinkable.
But yeah, that's a lifetime. That's a lifetime career, that is.
And that's what I've done in my businesses. So when I started my first company, I set the intention of, I am Trevor G. Blake. I am a brilliant businessman. And I sold Qual Medical. It still exists. You can look it up on the internet. I sold Qual Medical for at least $100 million. I set that intention before I even started the company. And I just keep doing that. And it just keeps working.
Well, that's seriously cool stuff. But I like the I've already done it. Oh, I am. I own. That's my philosophy on this. But it's always you apologized and there is no need because everybody needs to hear this stuff. You need to be reminded of it. You need to write the goals down. I mean, did you write these goals down?
Again, Doug, scientifically, it's proven that if we get pen and paper, we retain 40% more than if we use a digital device or if we just try and remember it. So actually, the process of writing down, really, without realizing it, again, this isn't three simple steps for that, but the process of writing down triggers our imagination. It's impossible to write, I sold Qual Medical for at least $100 million without imagining it happening.
Yes.
You can't write it and not think and look away and not think about it.
Yes.
So I find the writing down of things to be incredibly important. So I've always had a whiteboard and I always wipe it at night completely clean. And then the next morning, I write on there all my intentions. I write it rather like a paragraph, rather like I have this technique called mini mind movie. So you write a script because success with balance isn't just about being successful with money or successful with work. It's about relationships, having the lifestyle. So I have like a little mini mind movie script that I write out in the mornings on my whiteboard. And it's impossible to do that without mentally placing yourself in that state. So it's the trigger of the imagination, I think. That's my reason for writing everything in or recommending everybody write it in.
And look, selling businesses for $600 million. As far as I'm concerned, you're God, so whatever you say goes, right?
That's funny.
It's like, folks, success leaves clues, and we're getting loads and loads of them from Trevor here today. Write your goals down. I like the whiteboard. I like the whiteboard idea. And that is similar. I've got a little notebook that I started writing my goals in way back when. This is the original one. It's a little bit falling apart now. But it's the same sort of thing because the idea was to write the goals down and then turn the page over the following day, write them down again without reviewing the ones that you'd written the day before. Mm-hmm. And you're doing that in considerably more detail because you're writing the script for your future life in that regard.
Yeah, I think I got this technique from a self-help guy called Jack Black, Scottish guy who's very funny. I don't know if he's still with us around. But I read one of his books, and then the library also loaned out cassette tapes in those in those days. That's aging me, isn't it?
Aging us.
I listened to his tapes, and he had these wonderful techniques. And this particular technique, the two or three that I really loved, were crunching time, whereby as you write out and you imagine, if you put yourself into the space where you imagine what it feels like to actually have it, rather than wouldn't it be great if one day it happens? I found that to be a really magical thing. It was like a light switch for me. And he had all these other wonderful techniques, like the bell jar technique, where you protect yourself from other people's negative thoughts and things like that. And it's just, I will forever be grateful for getting that start from that guy.
And that's sometimes what it takes. Brian Tracy, Jack Canfield, those sorts of guys. The goals thing was Brian Tracy. And then the Jack Canfield, there's a couple writing a check that he stuck to the ceiling. $1 million or whatever. I think the first one he did was 100,000 and he got to 98. And was he gutted? No, not really, because he was only on 12 grand the year before. It's like that sort of crazy stuff. And so I'm loving. And flip me, the size of those goals. The size of those goals, that's the thing. I think sometimes maybe I think I'm thinking a little bit too small.
Yeah, so I think the same thing with myself because it takes the same energy to go from, say, 0 to 10 as it is to go from 10 to 100 and 100 to 1,000. Mathematically, it takes the same energy. And so I learned that the hard way too. I had read way back when Brian Tracy's books and everything. And I'd set myself the target. I was earning £7,000 a year working at Clatterbridge Hospital, where I stalked my wife. She was a nurse there. And I set myself the target of £30,000, which seemed impossible. And then just within 18 months, I was earning that, working for a company that doesn't exist now called Lifa, and a French pharma company. And then I came to the States, and that also was a goal. That was a target because we couldn't have kids. And my wife, so we said, okay, what are we going to do? We can be miserable for the rest of our lives, or we can be totally irresponsible for the rest of our lives.
Yeah.
We turned into a positive. My wife had always wanted to live and work in America. I knew nothing about America other than John Wayne movies. So I just made that into a goal, and we set about doing it, and off we go. And as part of that, I set the target of $300,000 as a salary. Now, that seems crazy. And I would never have shared that with anybody, not even with my wife. Mm-hmm. But I thought it worked before. I went from seven to 32,000. So I'm going to go from £32,000 to $300,000. When I was VP Commercial Development, I was earning $440,000 a year, plus stock options, plus all the trimmings that qualify. I didn't notice I'd passed the $300,000 mark, even though I'd written it out every single day.
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
yeah, it's magic. And then, of course, with companies, you said that. It seems to a lot, to talk a bit. One of the things I have on trevorgblake.com is a webinar called Falling in Love with Money. And it seems a bit crass, particularly to us Brits, to talk about money in this way. But I think if you don't get comfortable talking big numbers, they're always going to elude you. And so it's not that I was so arrogant to set at least 100 million as a target arrogantly. I deliberately put myself into a position where I felt really uncomfortable and embarrassed by using those numbers in my head.
Yeah,
and because it was madness, right? Absolute madness. Starting a company, don't really know what I'm doing, and thinking about selling it already for 100 million, that's just crazy. But these are the techniques I'd learned from all the biographies. This is what all of these amazing people did and still do. I just finished reading Elon Musk's biography. And now the funny thing is, I think sometimes I catch myself being a little cocky and think, yeah, I've done pretty well. I'm doing all right, the rest of it. And then I read Elon Musk's biography and I think, I haven't even started yet.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
I mean, think about the goals that he set for himself. Yes. And he does all the things that we're talking about. He uses all the techniques too. I don't think I'd like his lifestyle. I think I'm too lazy to be Elon Musk, but it's just amazing that I'm setting a goal for a couple of hundred million or whatever it may be, thinking that's really big. And then he's got a goal to 500 Teslas a week, which is multi-billion dollar company, mm-hmm. and talking in billions. And he talks casually about billions and tens of billions and hundreds of billions. Trillions now, in fact, and whereas I'm still only really comfortable talking in hundreds of millions. Which is funny, isn't it?
Because it's crazy.
In the old days, well, not that long ago, I was only comfortable talking about 30,000.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So we got a message for the listeners here. We got to think bigger.
Think bigger.
Don't put a limit on it, because you seem like a regular, normal kind of guy, right?
Well, I hope so. I mean, you'd have to ask Jess. So,
well, she's happy with you. So that's cool. Because you just got
married.
She laughs
at my jokes. She laughs at my jokes.
That's a good start.
90% of the secret, isn't it?
No, that's awesome. That is seriously awesome. But we need to have bigger goals. I'm going to ask you for a goal setting, Trevor Blake nugget, something that we haven't touched on already. So something the world needs to know. That's going to make a difference to them, but not something we've discussed already. It's a secret golden nugget from Trevor Blake.
Well, for me, the biggest secret is at times an illusion. And I can prove it scientifically, being a physicist. If you go to trevorgblake.com, you can find lots of information as to why that's the case. That really is a secret source for anyone who wants to get out of their version of quicksand. And we all have our own versions of that, right? So let's say someone's listening to this now and they're frustrated because they've got so much debt. And that holds us back always. I know what that feels like. I've walked into a Barclays bank in a town and tried to withdraw £20. I only had 10 in the bank. Mm. And that's embarrassing. And I remember how that felt. And I decided not having that in my life anymore. So knowing that time is an illusion, we can put ourselves in the place we think we want to get to right now. And we get the, as Neville Goddard would talk about, we get the feeling of that. What does it feel like? A day in the life of Trevor Blake as a billionaire, what does that feel like?
Mm.
And then we can crush time and we can bring it to us now. And the more we feel it, the quicker it comes to us. And so going back to the story of being a kid and dreaming of being an officer in the Royal Navy, but living in a ramshackle farmhouse without even any, all the pipes were frozen in the winter, so we didn't have water and like that. My sister got married and we had to fill a bath full of snow in order for her to wash for a wedding. And it was full of sheep droppings. That lifestyle to being in a Royal Naval officer's mess, eating off silver plates and all this kind of, that's a big gap. The way I did it was so I watched that TV series, Sailor. I imagine what that would feel like. I went to the library. I got every book I could possibly get on what it's like being at sea, what it's like being on a ship, what it's like being in the military. And then I would just absorb all that and I would crush this time thing. So if I was to try and do it by step baby goals, it might take me several hundred years before I can get there, right? But by putting myself in the feeling of what that feels like, it did two things. One is it came to me really quickly. The second thing is that when it came to me, I had the self-confidence to grab it. And that's, for me, that's the secret sauce. When we grab the feeling of something, when we have the feeling, we're able to then exploit the opportunity. Whereas if it comes another way, it would be like, I want to be this. And let's say it shows up at the front door. And then the fear starts. Oh, I've got what I asked for, but I don't feel ready for it. So crushing time does all that for you. It puts you in the feeling of it. When you get the feeling of it, you've got the confidence to actually do it.
I like that. That's seriously cool. That is, yes, because again, you're not going to be frightened, are you? Because you've already in here lived it.
Yeah, you expect it. And
you're just stepping into the expectation.
Yeah, that's people often ask me, okay, so when you achieve these goals and these intentions, you know, they're expecting me to say that I'm excited or I'm screaming off the rooftop or something like that. Because I put myself in the feeling of what it's actually like, when it arrives, I'm so ready for it. So I know it so well because I've done all the visualization for and all that kind of stuff. I know it so well that the feeling is really just one of gratitude. Yeah. It's like an old friend turning up. It's not, you don't jump up and down at the old friend. You say, to give him a hug. Yeah, I hug the goal rather than cheer about it and stuff like that. And that makes all the difference. That means I'm ready for it. And then I just move to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Or you miss it altogether and you're earning $450,000 in stock options, having bypassed the $300,000.
Yeah, that was
goal.
Yeah, that was the lesson. That was a really good lesson for me.
No, that's cool. You've got to measure it because who knows? You should have maybe increased it to a bigger figure knowing that you'd got there.
Yeah. And
you're doing okay. I mean,
the funny thing is, yes, when I sold my first company, I was living in this amazing gated community and there was a house that we liked the look of. And I didn't get all 100 million. It was 105.5 million, but I brought in investors by that point. So I'd been diluted down a little bit. I still wasn't complaining. I was still doing pretty well. Felt really good about myself. Thought, yeah, I've made it. This is a good day in the sunshine. And then I took the dogs out for a walk and went past that house and I still couldn't afford to buy that house.
Oh, wow.
That was a smack in the face. I thought, what? I haven't even started yet. So I'm going to go and do it again and keep doing it. So there is a real magic to thinking big. I look at I know the person who has that house. I know what they do and what they did in order to get that house. And that kind of started me off again, like, okay, I really do need to start thinking big now.
I love it. Now, again, I could keep hold of you for another hour or so, but I like to get the episode succinct and effective. I think we've done that, but I'm just going to pull something else out of you, just something that we might have missed. I mean, we're going to make sure that all of the links that you've provided to me are going to be in the show notes so everybody can go there. But it's trevorgblake.com. Right?
Yep.
For all of the stuff. And there's loads of stuff on there. I've had a quick peruse, and as I do. So there's some good stuff there, people, to download and fill your thoughts with. Follow me with getting the book, because I think that's a good start. And I'll be following up with the second one, no doubt. But just something else before we go that the world needs to know.
I don't know if the world needs to know it. Just I get asked a lot is if life is an either or thing. So I'm in the corporate world. Do I have to give up the corporate world in order to be an entrepreneur? Or I'm in the corporate world. Do I have to give it up because I want to be an artist or stuff like that? I'm on my seventh company. At any one time, I've had three or four on the go at the same time. But I also, as you mentioned before, Doug, I have an animal sanctuary. I've also written and sold two movie scripts that became blockbuster movies. And I have two New York Times bestsellers. I find that success with balance means doing all of these things together, rather like lots of ingredients in a beautiful recipe. I don't just work with flour. I don't just work with eggs. I work with it all and hopefully make a beautiful dinner or a beautiful pie or something like that, beautiful cake. I find that to be one of the other secrets, because when I was at school, I was always blown away by some of the people who were really good academically, but also brilliant at sports and also brilliant at arts. Mm-hmm. And they seemed brilliant at everything. And I was an okay soccer player, a football player. I was okay academic, but I wasn't any stuff. And I used to think, how does someone get so lucky to be good at all things? And then with all those biographies, I found out that they were as good at, in certain arts. They were as good at writing. They could sing. They could play musical instruments, and they could be successful entrepreneurs. And I found, so as I've got older and grayer, I've found out that they play together better. So if I stop working and spend time writing, I can use what I've learned working to actually tell a decent story. And I can, and in practicing telling a decent story, I can use that to write a decent business plan. So I find that they all play together really nicely. So I encourage anyone to not think in terms of either ors, but to say you can do it all and still have loads of spare time. You can do it all and still play with the animals.
I love it. Trevor, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on board. I really do appreciate. I think Lisa put us together. Bless her cotton socks. That's Lisa Cato. She needs a mention because, wouldn't have happened without her. So I do appreciate that.
She's in charge of the back end of trevorgblake.com. That's it. So she's been with me in that role for about a year. She came out to Southern California a month ago and we spent a few days together. Had a blast. Absolute blast.
Nice. I've not met her. I saw her on a Zoom call and I just said, I'd like some guests. And here we are. Shout out to Lisa. Thank you very much. It's been a blast. And I can't wait to devour your book and check a few more videos out and work out how I'm going to make my first 100 million. Be a good start.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you. That was really cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah, fun. Great to meet you.
Thank you for joining me in the third series of Goals Do Come True with me, Doug Bennett, the Goals Guy. I hope you're enjoying this series so far. The most important thing that you can do for me to help spread the word about goals and goal setting is to like the episode, share the podcast with your friends, and write us a review. If you're able to do any one of those things, or even all three, I would be greatly appreciative. Also, why not send me a little note to tell me how you're getting on? Just email me, doug@dougbennett.co.uk, just to let me know how you're getting on, how much you're enjoying the podcasts, and if there are any other subjects that you would be interested in me delving into the future. So don't forget, subscribe, review, and share with your friends. Just remember, goals do come true.